sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. The show you're about to hear today was originally aired in the summer of 2012. It's an interview with author Kevin Ryan after his book Another 19 was released. At the end of the show, I'll share parts of a new article Kevin Ryan has recently written called How Science Died at the World Trade Center. So let's begin with the 2012 interview with Kevin Ryan. Today, 9/11 researcher and author Kevin Ryan joins me on the show. His new book is called Another 19, Investigating Legitimate 9/11 Suspects. By way of introduction, I'm going to read part of the preface of this new book, and here goes. Quote, "It's been 10 years since I began studying the events of 9/11. This effort followed from my awareness that the 2003 U.S. invasion of Iraq was justified through a coordinated campaign of lies. Like many citizens who understood that, I wondered when the lying began. The answer to that question was more detailed and troubling than expected. While learning about the early problems with the official account, I began to follow up on information previously given to me by my employer, Underwriters Laboratories. Through communications with the CEO of Underwriters Laboratories and other top managers, I learned that the company had tested and certified the fire resistance of the steel components used to build the World Trade Center towers. A year spent asking difficult questions led to the knowledge that executives at UL could not explain how the buildings could have failed so quickly due to fire. In November 2004, I wrote to the government agency investigating the World Trade Center destruction, NIST, to get more information, and was shortly thereafter fired in retaliation. After finding another job and relocating my family, I realized the implications of UL's willingness to falsify its record with regard to the World Trade Center. Something was terribly wrong with the official account of 9/11. As those crimes continued to be the source of untold suffering and loss throughout the world, I became committed to discovering the truth." Unquote. I think that gives you a good idea of who Kevin Ryan is and how he's arrived at where he is today. Kevin Ryan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Your new book is called Another 19, Investigating Legitimate 9/11 Suspects. Why did you decide to write this book, and what's wrong with the official government 19 alleged hijackers?
Well, the official accounts of 9/11, which I've been studying for 10 years now, are false. That's the basic problem. They don't hold water. The 9/11 Commission report is deficient in many ways. It omitted and distorted many of the most important facts and failed to explain a number of very serious issues that need explanation in order for us to understand what happened. And the World Trade Center reports, which were produced by a government agency called NIST, these reports were produced through non-scientific methods, and the scientific physical testing results, which they produced, were ignored in favor of a computer-generated result, which independent investigators are not allowed to see. So the reason I wrote this book was because for many years, a number of us have been calling for a new investigation. And I believe that independent investigators like myself can do a lot of that investigation in the meantime. When we're waiting for a more authoritative body with subpoena power, we can do a lot of the investigation ourselves. And just by answering simple questions and providing options for how those questions can be answered, I think we can make some real progress.
And what's the response been so far to this book? Because it kind of takes the 9/11 truth movement in a different direction, where we're actually pointing at the government and officials who were in the government and laying some blame there. So what has the response been so far?
The response has been very positive. I've had a lot of good reviews of the book, and if you have seen the book, then you know that it's got strong support from a number of 9/11 victims' family members, as well as some leading researchers. And as people get the book and read it, it is very dense. It's got a lot of information in it. They generally find that it's useful to them in understanding what might have occurred and really focuses on people who were in position to accomplish things that have not yet been explained.
And if someone wanted to get a copy of the book, where would they go to do that?
Well, the book's available on Amazon. It's actually published through a company owned by Amazon called CreateSpace. So the primary way to get the book is through Amazon.
All right, let's talk about a couple of the 19 you chose to write about in your book. Maybe you could tell us about a couple of your favorites and why are they legitimate suspects?
Okay, well, the book is framed around five unexplained aspects of the event. So a couple of the people that are very interesting and should be investigated thoroughly, and I go into some detail on them, are the leaders of the U.S. intelligence agencies, the FBI and the CIA at the time. Actually, the guy who led the FBI from 1993 to 2001, his name was Louis Freeh. And he left the FBI just before 9/11, but he is a strong suspect in the events that lead up to 9/11 and therefore kind of prepared the public mind, I'd say, for the events of 9/11. The other person would be George Tenet, who was the director of the CIA, and he also seemed to be preparing the framework around which the 9/11 attacks would be inserted in the sense that he was hyping the threat of terrorism, and yet not doing anything to actually protect the nation from terrorism. I go into some detail on that. Some other people that are very interesting are the leaders of the agencies FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, and also NORAD, which was the military organization responsible for defending the airspace around the continental United States. And so people like Benedict Sliney, from the FAA, the National Operations Manager, and Michael Canavan, the FAA's hijack coordinator, are examined, and also Ralph Eberhardt, who was the commander of NORAD. And these people are very interesting because they all did things that wouldn't be expected in terms of failing to respond to the attacks as they were occurring, and engaging in some cases in very coincidental military exercises that in some ways mimic the attacks and cause confusion. Other people include the leaders of the country at the time. Donald Rumsfeld was the Secretary of Defense. You know, he was on 9/11, absent during the height of the attacks and couldn't be reached. And he's really, along with Dick Cheney, what I call kind of an alternative Osama bin Laden and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, kind of the leaders of this alternative proposal, were Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld. And then finally, the World Trade Center buildings, the final aspect that really needs to be explained is how three World Trade Center skyscrapers could have fallen through what should have been the path of most resistance. And that really boils down to who had the ability to place explosives in the buildings. And I go into a lot of detail on the people who designed the security system. Brian Michael Jenkins of Kroll Associates, for example, is a suspect. The leaders of a company called Stratesec, which was a security company at the World Trade Center, as well as several other facilities on 9/11. And also Rudy Giuliani, who controlled the cleanup and the Ground Zero site. So there's a lot in the book. I think that people will learn new things, even if they've studied 9/11 in detail for years, they find that they will learn new things and find a new perspective.
Absolutely. One thing that I learned in it was Richard Clark, who I always thought was kind of a nice guy. And in your book, you elaborate on how he has these deep connections to the United Arab Emirates and is now, I guess, connected to them in ways and financially benefiting.
Yeah, absolutely. People point that out, that Richard Clark has historically been seen as kind of a good guy in that he apologized, mainly because he apologized to the 9/11 victims' families at one point when the investigation into 9/11 seemed to be spiraling out of control. He stepped up in public and kind of made everybody take a pause by apologizing and saying that, you know, we failed you, we should have done better. And with Richard Clark, that is very much an understatement. If you read the chapter on Richard Clark, he not only failed to prevent terrorism in his 9 years as the lead counterterrorism expert in the United States, he actually obstructed a number of initiatives to capture terrorists or to investigate terrorists. And this is fairly straightforward in that he basically admitted in the joint inquiry, his testimony to the joint inquiry, that he did in fact tip off his friends at the United Arab Emirates when there were plans to capture, for example, Osama bin Laden. But the United Arab Emirates is very interesting because they were the owners of a known terrorist financing network that had been called the mother and father of all terrorist financing networks, known as BCCI, the Bank of Credit and Commerce International. And so Richard Clark is very close to the royal family of the United Arab Emirates that owns BCCI. And that is very surprising given that he was supposed to be the lead counterterrorism expert. And frankly, in the 9/11 Commission report, a lot of the clues point to the United Arab Emirates. So we have to take everything in the Commission report with a grain of salt, but some of it we can expect is true. And a successful lie, which 9/11 appears to be, does need to be built around some framework, bits and pieces of truth. And so I think that it would be very good to know what Richard Clark was doing in the United Arab Emirates, what he's doing there now, profiting there, and why he wasn't investigated more thoroughly.
Yeah. Now, in your book, you wrote on the bottom of page 313, you said, controlled opposition is the basic concept behind the idea that Al-Qaeda works for an international intelligence network to induce public support for policy when needed. Could you elaborate on that, the idea of controlled opposition and then the international intelligence network?
Yeah, I believe that the way that people are very successful at high levels in maintaining conflict while also profiting from that conflict is captured in the phrase controlled opposition. And I try to explain a couple of examples. During the 1980s, there was a big conflict between the countries Iran and Iraq. The Iran-Iraq war lasted for 10 years, and the United States played a role through propaganda and through covert operations of exacerbating that war. And basically, in the 80s, you may know that we were selling arms to Iran, the Reagan administration was, and while we were also supporting Iraq, Saddam Hussein in Iraq, Donald Rumsfeld even went to Iraq and met with Saddam Hussein and supported him in gaining weapons and chemical weapons and so forth. So the Iran-Iraq war is an example of where the United States military apparatus and government really played both sides of a conflict for its own gain. I give an example, not everyone would believe this, but I believe that the political system in the United States, where there's only two parties really, is something of a show that allows for Democrats and Republicans to kind of play off each other and frame the discussion of national priorities around things that won't really threaten their status quo very much. For example, 9/11 is rarely, if ever, discussed critically in terms of the evidence for alternative suspects. Electronic voting machines are rarely, if ever, discussed and the dangers of those.
But I agree with you 100% on that. And it doesn't matter who's president, which party, the same policies get carried out.
Exactly. And so I think people should take a look at Al-Qaeda as a possibility of being an organization that is utilized to create an opposition that we must fight. And that there's a lot of evidence that the United States funded the precursor organizations to Al-Qaeda, that Osama bin Laden worked for the CIA at one time. You know, that makes people wonder, well, is Al-Qaeda still working as a proxy army around the world, for example? It appears that Al-Qaeda was part of the Libyan opposition that we supported when Libya was a change in government in Libya occurred a few years ago. In Syria today, Al-Qaeda is known to be part of the opposition groups as kind of a proxy army. So the United States seems to be using Al-Qaeda as a false opponent in various places. And I think personally that 9/11 is another example of that, that controlled opposition, you know, controlling the opponent is a great way to be able to allow them to give political convenience. And you may remember Bush often had a lot of help from Al-Qaeda at various points with videos being released and politically opportune times and so forth.
Right. And of course, when they have this controlled opposition, then they get the American public to agree to go to war in Iraq and for their financial gain.
Yeah, the financial, it's really been a major coup in terms of government policy, the events of 9/11, and financially has been devastating.
Now, in your book, you mentioned Peter Dale Scott and his idea of the deep state. And then on page 5 in your book, you wrote, "Once we tap into this ongoing, quote, inside job, we will have the power to make lasting, positive change in our society." Could you elaborate on that?
Yes. And so what I mean by that is there's another way to look at 9/11 being an inside job, in that if you've ever discussed the unanswered questions of 9/11 with people, their response is one of two things. It's either to listen attentively, look into it more themselves, and agree that typically they do agree that there are serious questions to be answered. The alternative is that they will just not look at it at all. And so 9/11 is an opportunity, in my opinion, for us to address the psychological mechanisms by which we are deceived. And whether it be deceived by others or how we deceive ourselves, 9/11 is largely a taboo subject in the United States. The unanswered questions of 9/11 are, people who think they know what happened on 9/11 oftentimes can't tell you even the basics of the official account. And so 9/11 is an ongoing inside job internally. You know, we actually are deceiving ourselves continuously. And if you have some knowledge of the history of war, as I have learned in the last 10 years, most wars are based on deception. And so these things that are so impactful to our lives have to do with deception. And that's why I say, if we learn about that and we learn to not be deceived so easily and teach our children to learn to not be deceived so easily, that it will create a society that is better capable of staying war-free, maintaining peace, being fair to each other. I think even to that extent, being fair to people, because we're not being deceived with these age-old tools of ego that are used for the most part in promoting lies like 9/11.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And 9/11, as you said, most of the wars have been based on deception, like the Gulf of Tonkin for Vietnam, etc. As I've gotten into 9/11 and studied it, I've learned that we've been so duped on so many levels. And then that brings me to the corporate media and how they're not covering the facts, and there's part of the deception and creating the taboo. And I just wondered if you had any thoughts about that.
Yeah, I read a book not too long ago that I wish I had read years ago. It's called Manufacturing Consent. It's co-authored by Noam Chomsky. And it's a model of propaganda that's very solidly supported by a good number of evidentiary cases. And the point is that they make is that the mainstream media, or the corporate media in the United States, is largely a tool by which the corporations and the high-level financiers in the United States control their message through propaganda. So manufacturing consent is the kind of thing that I believe the mainstream media and corporate media have done with regard to 9/11. They've just presented whatever the official account has been on any given time. People may know that the 9/11 Commission gave us the fourth distinct different story for the air defense failure, so that the story had changed over the years. And the NIST group gave us another explanation. Several had failed for why the World Trade Center buildings had collapsed. But all along, the media would support whatever the story was and would never go back and critically examine, how did we support this pancake theory, and who came up with this? And now that we know it's false, what have we done in the meantime, you know, with the idea that this pancake theory explained the destruction of these buildings? So anyway, I think the media is a tool for propaganda, and you know, whether it be consciously or subconsciously or just through the the construction of the hierarchy within the media organizations. There are certain taboo subjects, and 9/11 is one of them.
Now, are there any other suspects besides these, another 19 that you wrote about? I mean, I know you were trying to match the 19 that the government has used, but are there others?
Yes, I did actually mention that there are others. Obviously, I talked about a former senator from Oklahoma, David Boren, who was George Tenet's mentor. And he ran, since 1994, the University of Oklahoma. And a number of the alleged hijackers were seen in the area where David Boren lives and works. And Zacharias Moussaoui, who was once called the 20th hijacker, actually lived and trained at Boren's airport at the University of Oklahoma. There's some strong connections also between that area and the Stratesec company that's so interesting. So I think Senator Boren should be a suspect as well. And there are other people. The late Wayne Downing, who died a few years ago, was a general, a special operations general, and a leader of a company called SAIC, Science Applications International Corporation. I go into a great deal of detail on SAIC with regard to their chief operating officer, Dwayne Andrews, who was the protege of Dick Cheney. And SAIC has tons of connections to 9/11, not only predicting some of the terrorist attacks, but doing the investigations as well and providing evidence for the suspects, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and others. So Wayne Downing is another example. And throughout the book, I do go into a few other suspects. You know, other people may have a whole different list as well. I actually started out with over 40 suspects when I began writing this book, and narrowed it down based on their accessibility to the systems and the technologies needed to accomplish the crimes. So there very possibly were more than 19 people, but as you said, the point of the book is that a lot of people think the official account is more plausible because the people involved were smaller in number, only 19 plus the leaders of Al-Qaeda. So I gave 19 others that could have accomplished everything that the official account says was done, plus also all these other unexplained things.
And as the 12th anniversary of 9/11 approaches, where do you see the 9/11 truth movement heading?
Well, I think that the success that we have had is less about, in the last few years, is less about people kind of wrangling on the internet in chat rooms or even on blogs, and more about publishing more credible research. I think that over the years there's been scientific articles, peer-reviewed scientific articles, 2008, 2009, and since then, that have been published in reputable scientific journals, and that helps a lot. I think that the professional organizations, whether it be journalists for 9/11 Truth or lawyers for 9/11 Truth and religious leaders and so forth, I think those have made some progress in showing people that respected professionals around the world are calling for the truth about 9/11. Going forward, I think that the research into the scientific aspects, as well as hopefully people will take this book as a template for moving forward with looking at suspects who could have actually accomplished the crimes, and hopefully in a way that's supported by evidence, because if you have my book, you know there's over 1,000 detailed references in the book. So I'm not just throwing out these people and saying, hey, they benefited or they were in the area. I really go into detail with most of them and say these specific reasons they need to be investigated. They had this specific access. They had these abilities. And that connects with what actually happened. So I think more of that will really help.
And what's next for you, Kevin? Are you going to be doing more research into this?
Yeah, I'm actually thinking about what's next for me right now. I do know that one thing I need to follow up on is there's some research I'm doing with Professor Niels Harrit in Denmark on what are called carbon nanotubes, which coincidentally have been found not only in the lungs of 9/11 first responders, but in the residues from the ignition of thermitic materials that we've been studying. So I'll be following up on those carbon nanotubes and probably also continuing to edit the Journal of 9/11 Studies. There's always activity there, and we'll see what else I have time for.
Okay. And if someone's new, you know, is tuned in today and they're new to the 9/11 Truth Movement and they want to learn more, where would you encourage a newcomer to go to get started on this?
Well, there are certain sites. It depends on, and websites definitely help, and books as well for a newcomer, because you can just on your own time go to a website or to a book. Of course, there's also conferences that occur, speech talks that people give around the country. Those are also helpful. But in terms of websites, if people just don't know anything about the unanswered questions of 9/11, I would start at places like the History Commons 9/11 Complete Timeline, or a website called 911research.com, or even other websites like 911truth.org, and see if you can't begin to see the scope of the questions and try to get some answers initially.
And is there anything that I haven't asked you that you want to share with the listeners about your book or the 9/11 Truth Movement or any of that?
Well, as far as my book goes, it's really just a very detailed inspection of suspects. I would say there are some strong themes that run through it, whether it be BCCI connections, as we discussed BCCI, a program called the Continuity of Government program that Richard Clark and Rumsfeld and Cheney were involved with, and also a private network of operatives seems to be connected, going back basically to the Carter and Ford administrations. So there are all these themes, organized crime, especially with regard to Rudy Giuliani, and so those things are important, and people can really start to dig out the information on their own and try to make some dots connect in ways that are useful.
Okay, great. And would you also recommend, if they want sort of the science of the towers, to check out Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was once a board member there and actually resigned so I could work on the book and devote my time to the book. But that's a great organization. And, of course, the Journal of 9/11 Studies, where I'm co-editor.
And that, what's the website for the Journal of 9/11 Studies?
It's spelled out Journal of 9/11 Studies, 911studies.com.
Okay. And then your website, digwithin.net?
That's right. That's my personal blog, digwithin.net. And I cover a lot of different subjects there. And people can learn about me and my background. And I think it's interesting for people who have the time to do it.
Kevin, thank you very much for being on the show, and thank you for writing this great book. I think it takes the movement in a new direction that's going to move us forward with that new investigation.
Thank you, Cheryl. I really appreciate the support.
And again, that was an interview with author Kevin Ryan, whose book, Another 19, Investigating Legitimate 9/11 Suspects, was recently released and can be found at Amazon or requested through your local bookstore. I highly recommend it. And again, that was a 2012 interview with author and researcher Kevin Ryan. On February 15th, 2015, Kevin Ryan posted a new article on his website, digwithin.net, called How Science Died at the World Trade Center. And in it, he states that politically motivated pseudoscience demonstrates a pattern of characteristics as follows. 1. There's a lack of experiments. 2. The results of experiments are ignored or contradicted in the conclusions. 3. There is either no peer review or peer reviewer comments are ignored. 4. The findings cannot be replicated or falsified due to the withholding of data. 5. False conclusions are supported by marketing or media propaganda. And 6. Hypotheses that are supported by the evidence are ignored. And he goes on to say, all 6 of these characteristics of pseudoscience are exhibited by the U.S. government investigation into what happened at the World Trade Center on September 11, 2001. And then he goes on to back up those statements with the evidence. And again, you can find the full article on his website, digwithin.net. And now I want to remind you that 9/11 Wake Up Calls shows are archived on the station website, wwuh.org, for 2 weeks after airing. And they're permanently archived on the website radioforall.net. And that's the digit 4, so radioforall.net. And once on the website there, in the search box, just type in Cheryl with a C, and all the shows should pop up. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.